But here's a guy who just wrote me he's about to write me a $1.3 million check for this one roof.
Now I'm paced to do $30 million in revenue this year.
Quick question, will you hire that person you see in the mirror? I will not hire that person.
Running two thriving companies.
You know, no one's gonna come and knock on your door and say, here, I got a big deal for you.
Leadership, discipline, and building a business and a life you're proud of.
You know, because it is gonna happen. 1 out of 10 years, your business is gonna suffer.
This is AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros, the show for contractors who want to grow without wasting time or money. If you're in roofing, HVAC, plumbing, or any home service business, we break down how AI and modern marketing can help you book more jobs, close more leads, and build a business that runs without babysitting every task.
At 6 years old, Victor Maya crossed rivers and deserts from Mexico into the U.S., not speaking a word of English. That outsider's perspective became his edge, turning a street-smart hustler into the CEO of Advantage Roofing and Advanced Restoration, now on pace to do $30 million in revenue this year. In this episode, Victor shares how he went from managing subcontractor crews to running two thriving companies, why your goals fall into your systems, not the other way around, and how service and maintenance programs can bring stability and growth to any contracting business. This is a conversation about leadership, discipline, and building a business and a life you're proud of. Let's get into it. So Victor, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, man, I really appreciate it. We first met at the Dredge Graham and Matt Monero event probably 4 years ago?
Oh yeah, it's been a while, man.
It's been a while. And obviously, you know, you're one of the few contractors that was in that space. So it's very, very good to meet you at that space. So let's get this going. So, you know, you started when you were 21 years old, where you started when you were young, right? You're managing subcontractor crews. Eventually you met with a mentor, right? And he told you to start your own business. You really venture off on your own. What made you like get into that? What made you like take the leap of faith? Because that's a big leap for a lot of contractors actually starting that journey.
Well, like you said about, you know, a person of interest, you know, this person, you know, I mean, hey, this happened to me in 2020. And I mean, well, 2010, my bad. I don't know why I said 2020. In 2010, that gentleman, his name is Chris. And I mean, he told me like, hey, Victor, you don't need them. You know, they need you. And what he's referring to was all these roofing contractors. But this person, you know, I mean, when he found me, I remember we were up on a building. And he said, hey, Victor, hey, can you do this building for me? This is about, I want to say 1,300 squares of roof. And I asked him, hey, how much you're going to pay me? He gives a piece of napkin, writes $1.3 million. So I said to myself, wait, I'm working my butt off doing all these residential roofs and commercial buildings as a subcontractor. But here's a guy who just wrote me he's about to write me a $1.3 million check for this one roof. Like, I'm doing something wrong. So yeah, man, I mean, that person, you know, honestly, dude, I mean, it's not just a leap of fate. It's, you know, I mean, he saw something in me that I couldn't see in myself. Because I mean, I'd rather keep it real, you know, and not sit here and say that I did it myself. You know, a lot of people believed in me and took their leap of fate to invest in me. Time, energy, and some of them invested money. So yeah.
And he was an actual customer, right? End customer He was an actual customer, and he told you, hey, I think you do the great work. You don't need these other sub roofers. You can do it on your own. And he basically hired you, right? Hired you to actually like do the job. That's how it started.
Yeah. Well, I was working for many roofing companies. So he told me, I don't need to be working for them no more. I don't need them. They need me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And how many crews were you managing like that at that time?
About
like
14 to 16.
And where would you find them?
From all over the United States, man. They'll come from Texas. Some of them will come from Florida, Minnesota, Oklahoma City. You know what I mean? They came from everywhere.
And that's a big challenge for a lot of contractors even today is finding good, reliable crews, right? That actually can fulfill on the job, right?
Oh, yeah.
How do you like vet these people? How do you vet them that they do a good job and actually can fulfill on the actual job?
Well, one thing I was believing is, you know, birds of a feather flock together, right?
Yeah.
So these guys, you know, I mean, they know each other. So if you treat them well and you're paying them well, you're paying them on time and timely manner, they're going to refer you to other friends of theirs. So the same thing here, you know, I mean, as a company, I believe in the same thing. A lot of our staff came from people they know, you know, friends and other people that, you know, being a, let's say for an example, sales. There's a sales guy and then he knows another sales guy who works for another roofing company. So he'll come and work for us. They'll shift.
And then how do you develop the excellence? Like, do you do it through training programs for these crews, or like, do you actually go through the actual workmanship warranties? How do you actually develop that core systems for these guys? Some of these guys obviously have different levels of experience, right? I'm assuming. So some of them come prepared, some have less experience. How do you actually develop that internally for these guys?
Well, it's, how can I say, this is more like psychology, you know what I mean? They first going to look at the leader, you know what I mean? The leader breeds, the leader, you know, you can't BS no one around, you know, just like the way you can see people through their BS, they can see that too through you. So when they see me come in here early in the morning, they know I'm up. I was up today, 4:30 in the morning. They know the excellence, how I move my life. So they're in proximity to me, and then their proximity to managers here. So they see the excellence through all that. I mean, they're going to start trying to be that. So it all starts with you, man. You know, at the end of the day, you know what I mean? That was a good, you know, a friend of mine. He became a real good friend of mine, one of my suppliers. I still remember when I met him, Papa Nick. He's the owner of John Don. And I remember I took him out to eat. And one thing Papa Nick taught me was, and this was back in 2012. I was barely starting, and I was going to start Advanced Restoration in 2014. I was learning the business model for water and fire mitigation. And he looked at me and I told him, hey, how do you do this, sir? You know what I mean? Look, your companies are, wow, they're well established. Humongous supplier. And he looked at me and he said, look, son, do you see that mirror right there? And I said, okay, what about the mirror? He goes, all right, quick question. Will you hire that person you see in the mirror? And honestly, Mauricio, at that point, I would not hire that person, because as I wanted so bad A-plus players, the person in that mirror was not an A-plus player. He was maybe a B-minus player. You know, my health was bad. Everything was bad. You know, so again, after I became that person I wanted to be, which I believe being an A-plus player, then you're going to bring in A-plus player and you're going to keep them. Because I promise you this, if you're a B player and you're trying to bring A-plus player, you're going to bring them. You might be able to persuade them to come, but then they're going to smell your BS and they're just going to leave you.
Yeah, that's for sure. So, I mean, and you were a B-plus player back then. So you actually turned, how did you become an A player? You just basically started learning on your own, reading. Like, what is it that made you become an A player? Experience?
Oof. I mean, one thing, I always believe in proximity, man, and getting around the right people. Like, where you met me was with Judge Graham and them. You know, Judge Graham and Matt Monero. As you know what I mean, at the end, you know what I mean, the book that I wrote, I mean, they became, they even signed off on the book, you know, as, I forgot what they call them, but they signed off on the book. So yeah, I mean, at the end of day is proximity plays a big role. Is who you're around, it means a lot. So that's one. Number two is, like you said, about reading. You know, as you look at my background, those are a lot of books, you know, a lot of books. And then in my house, I have another library with books. So yeah, I love to read a lot, you know. So yeah.
And one of the things we talked about last week when we had a call is that you mentioned that you actually maintain all your codes, right? With the actual, like, specific guidance, right? For each, maintenance, actual equipment, right? You talked about how you actually keep up with the date, with all those different codes. Like, how do you actually do that? You do that every single day, or
what do you mean with codes?
Well, you're different. You mentioned last time, hey, like, I'm actually reading this book about the different codes for the actual roof, like actual specifications for the manufacturers. Is that something that you keep up?
Yeah, that was what I was showing you was the, what they call the International Building Code, you know?
Yeah.
I'm still reading it. There's this big boy right here.
Got it.
I have to read it because, I mean, I'm getting ready so I can take my commercial roofing license test. I mean, my commercial license test for Louisiana.
Got it. Okay, yeah, got you.
So, like Florida, you know, same thing. You know what I mean? You got to be licensed to do the big stuff.
Got it. Awesome. Commercial and luxury roofing can feel like a closed club sometimes for a lot of people. How did you break into that space? Because a lot of people think it's harder actually to sell to those people. How did you break into those high-end clients?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I always remember, like you said, how do I bring in a lot of clients? I mean, that's the real question is, how do I attract those kind of people? How do I bring them in? It's all through a selling system, you know? It's all a selling system. It's, you know what I mean? I've suspect the right person. So wherever I'm at, if I find the right candidate, then that person becomes a prospect, you know? And then after that, I try to sell them at least a service and maintenance, you know, agreement or something, or give them to one of my sales guys and they follow up with them trying to sell sell a service and maintenance agreement. So like you said about how do you find them? I mean, you're going to have to go and look for them. They're not just, you know, I mean, one thing I got, the way I got trained by a good friend of mine, he was like, Victor, you know, at the end of the day, son, you're not Kim Kardashian. You know, no one's going to come and knock on your door and say, here, I got a big deal for you.
Yeah.
You're going to have to hunt. You know, you're going to have to find these great candidates.
And how do you identify them? Is it like business owners or commercial property owners? How do you actually identify these people?
What's funny is what you say about identify, because at the end of the day, the way I look at it, you got to treat everybody with respect. Like today in the morning, I was on a phone call with a good friend of mine. His name is Eunice. Eunice, he owns maybe a good 10 million square feet of commercial real estate. He loves buying CVSs. He loves buying a lot of triple net lease properties. And the way I found that guy was out in the street, and he was mowing his own yard in a commercial building because he was bored. And it was a hot day, and I just passed by there. Man, it's a hot day. I went over there, gave him a bottle of water. Then we just start talking. But that's the way I look at it, man. I mean, I just treat everybody with respect, man. I don't just go and look at it with the guy with the Rolex and all that. I'm like, that's stupid, or Bentley. A lot of my good friends that own a lot of real estate, they don't like Bentleys. They like their F-150s, their Toyota Tacomas.
So you basically just struck up a conversation with someone that you didn't know who was, and you just became friendly with them. And then he ended up being like a very high-end commercial person.
Yeah. I mean, you never know, man. I mean, who's in front of you, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you look at me, I mean, honestly, if you want me as a client, you might just pass by me and not even acknowledge me because of what I wear. I mean, I wear just your regular jeans with cowboy boots and navy blue shirt. No Rolex, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Rubber. So you might just pass by me and not even acknowledge me. And to me, that's kind of a big mistake that a lot of people make, you know?
Got you. You mentioned before that you sell a maintenance program and you have your salespeople do that. How do you make it, like, when you approach a prospect, so easy for them to sell?
You say so easy. There's a lot of different ways of how we find clientele to sell service and maintenance. You know, like you said, I mean, like I told you in the beginning, a lot of it is through words of mouth when it comes to hiring employees. It's the same thing with property owners. You know, a lot of property owners know other property owners, you know, and they know we understand, you know, business. You know, I mean, we understand cap rate here. We understand about their cap rate. We want to make sure we keep it up. So to keep up their cap rate, we got to make sure that we're not over there trying to just get every dollar that we can off of them.
Go ahead. And you start with the maintenance program. You make it super simple. You don't try to sell them like a full roof replacement. You start with the maintenance program.
We never try to sell it. Yeah. We never sell a full roof replacement. That's not what they called you for, man. It's like heat and air. You know what I mean? The same thing is they just want to repair. It's like electrical. Same thing. All they want is repair. They know the building's not to code. They know the buildings are not in well shape. The plumbing is whack. They know the roof is whack. All these trays are whack. But all they want is repair it so they can make more money off their property. But a lot of owners that own, you know, roofing companies, HVAC companies, all these trade companies, the first thing they want to do is sell them a whole full-blown system. That's not what they want.
Yeah, it's much easier. I'm sorry, I'm saying it's much easier to sell that job, a $720 maintenance program versus a $2 million roofing project. It's much less tape work, much less work and doing that, right? I'm setting that up, right?
Well, you say a maintenance program. I mean, before we do a maintenance program, we got to, first thing first, you got to do a repair, you know, a full-blown repair to get the building up for a maintenance program. You cannot just go up there and say, I'm going to give you a maintenance program, because maybe the building has never been maintained. So you got to do a lot of cleanup. You got to make a lot of patches. Maybe the repair itself costs maybe $7,300 just to repair it, to get it up for maintenance. And then from there, now you're talking about $8.99, $11.99 a year, once a year to go out there and maintain the building. But that's little money, you know what I mean? The way I look at it is, the way I look at it is like playing Monopoly, you know? You get as many buildings as you can, and then at the end, then you get the big building. You know, that has always happened to us. I mean, this year we did one pretty good size one. I mean, it was almost $1 million, and that came out of a $820 repair 2 years ago, you know?
I've heard before of commercial contractors where they actually do the repair. They don't even charge the client. If it's a good commercial prospect, they don't even charge the client sometimes for the repair. They might eat that cost, and they actually develop the relationship where it actually brings them to the door. Have you seen that before?
I've never seen that.
Never seen that before. Okay. So you just charge, typically, how much do you charge for the repair, depending on the size of the size and scope of the job, I guess?
Correct. Because when you say a repair, you know, I mean, everything's automized. It's kind of like going to grocery shopping, you know, so when you, it's just, that's our business model. It's like going grocery shopping. You're going to get an automized invoice from materials and labor broken down. And then you're going to get photo documentation from the building itself, front elevation, and then you're going to get before and after pictures of the work that was completed. So, you know, you gets ripped off. We did, really, literally did something.
Got you. Okay. So you talked about vehicle wraps, right? You talked about the importance. How important is branding to your business to attracting those high-end clients?
Oh, it's absolutely. I mean, it's big because, I mean, again, it's one thing that I love saying all the time is what you see is all you get, you know? If you see a white van and just little letterings, they're not going to acknowledge you. If they see a beat up van, you know what I mean? You're trying to do a big building, they're not going to acknowledge you. They're going to treat you like that. So, I mean, I'm all about the way companies look. I mean, our company look. And I mean, like, we're talking about excellence. You know what I mean? If you look at our vehicles, they're all Sprinters. You know, all our service vans, they're all Sprinters. The fleet is all Ram. It's a Ram. You're going to get a, if you work with us, you're going to get a Ram 1500 or 2500. It depends what you do in the company. And they're going to be your, what is it called? Not the Longhorn, the Bighorn editions. So you're going to have your backup screens and all that stuff, maybe some heaters in the seats. So we're all about excellence, dude. So yeah, dude, I mean, it's all, it, what you see is all you get when it comes to marketing.
Got it. And so you actually, obviously, so you spend a lot of money on the brand. What is it? Why do you think a lot of contractors are hesitant to actually invest in that aspect of their business?
Well, it's one thing I always see is, because I get asked that question, and one thing I always answer it with is, I mean, the way I answer it is, what's more important? You know, because you say that they're hesitant to waste money in their business on marketing, but I bet they're not, and this is kind of hard, but they're not hesitant to waste money on that nice boat or that nice, you know what I mean, car, but they're hesitant investing in their money, in their business. And I believe that that's why, I mean, we'll separate ourselves from a lot of people because we're not afraid of that. You know what I mean? I still get a paycheck. I'm a salary paid employee of the company, you know, and people don't believe that. I'm like, what? I'm like, yeah, the company pays me and the rest of the money goes back into the company so it can keep growing. That's how we are able to buy our own telehandlers while other companies are renting these big machines for whatever it is, $3,200 a month. We'll buy our own.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think a lot of contractors are hesitant because they spent money, invested in money, and it hasn't really worked out for them sometimes with marketing. But for us, right, it makes our job much easier to work with someone when they have the actual brand behind them, when they invested in the actual vehicle wraps, when they invested in the actual video, right? Having custom content, having custom photos, right? Hiring a professional photographer for their website, yeah. Right? It's important because it makes you look very professional when somebody lands on your website. So it makes our job easier when we're doing ads, right? When we're doing SEO, it makes it much easier to convert, right? One of the things that I've seen the last 5 or 10 years, especially this year, I've seen big changes in how people are presenting themselves online. Because if you're not presenting yourself in that manner, then a lot of actual business owners are not getting the same leads as before, right? So obviously you work with a lot of high-end clients, so it might be a little bit different, but a lot of contractors we work with, right, a lot of residential, they are struggling with the lead generation because of that actual purpose. They haven't really invested their money in the actual aspect. So that's one of the things that I've seen is changes, right, with the market, with the economy, right? It's a lot more competitive today, right, 2025 versus it was 7 years ago, right? It's more expensive today. It's more expensive to actually promote yourself on Facebook or Google or whatever. It's more expensive, harder to rank on Google now than it was 10 years ago. So all these things becoming more competitive. So if you're not doing these other things, like you're doing, like the actual branding, making yourself presentable online, it's a very important. It's going to make you not stand out. The other thing is like, think about yourself. You said the trucks, right? You have the trucks, they all look really nice, right? They're high end. It's about curb appeal, right? You understand in real life, offline world, a lot of contractors see that and understand it. But when they go online, they don't have that curb appeal, right? Cause they have a bad website or just a bad online presence. So think about a homeowner when they see, or just like a customer when they see that, they don't have that curb appeal. So that's really the issues that I see a lot with a lot of contractors. They're not really doing right. So One of the things that you talked about, like I read your book this past weekend, is about adversity, right? Obviously, you've overcome a lot of adversity with all the things you've gone through, and you still built two thriving companies. What has personal adversity helped you with your businesses? How has that helped you with your business?
Well, I mean, one thing that I'm not afraid to try the impossible, man. You know, I mean, I was lived by not being afraid. You know what I mean? Since I came here without nothing. You know what I mean? My mother, you know what I mean? Thanks to her, she brought me and my brother passes through the border as immigrants, you know? So if you think about it, you know what I mean? When I was in poverty, I always looked at it, poverty, skipped the middle class and went to this other class, the upper class. But one thing is, I never got stuck there in my mind. I have always had that poverty mindset, more like, when I say poverty, more of a mindset of, I don't got nothing to lose. You know, like my wife always brings that up to me. She's like, man, I don't know how you do it. You just do it and you make it happen. But that's another thing, is fear. You know what I mean? One thing about fear, you can use fear just to stop you from moving forward. It can just stop you, or you can use fear to accelerate you. So when I fear, one thing I learned, Mauricio, is I accelerate. I do more. I'm that person that I wake up earlier. You know what I mean? I will work harder because I'm so afraid of failing. And when I take something upon myself, I promise you, I'm going to do my very best to deliver. Like if someone hires me to do a speaking engagement, I got some coming right now. If I say yes to that, I am going to deliver the best I can. You know, and I mean, that's one thing about me, man. So yeah, I mean, when it comes down to that, is I'm not afraid of it, man. You know what I mean? And you know me very well. People will tell you that about me, is he's not afraid. You know, now one thing I am pretty, I'll be honest with you, is I like sleeping good at night, you know? I like sleeping good at night. Yeah. And a good friend of mine taught me about this. You know, he was the vice president of Carrabba's restaurant, Marty. Marty, you know, I mean, one time I asked Marty a question. And I asked Marty, hey, Marty, I don't know that much about finances, like financing, you know, to borrow money and all that so I can grow faster. How do you do it? He goes, no, you know, you know about finances and all that, man. You know about interest rates and all that. I go, well, yeah, I do. And then he goes, well, it's pretty easy, Victor. How good do you want to sleep at night? I'm like, what do you mean? Well, if you don't want to sleep good at night, just get into a lot of debt. It's okay. You know, but you're not going to get good sleep.
Yeah.
Well, from me to you is I get good sleep because I'm not in debt like that at all. You know, I mean, everything that we build here, like our office space here, and we're sitting on 3.8 acres. We bought this about six years ago in cash. And then our new building, you know what I mean? We paid for it in cash. So we always believe in not having that much debt. So when chaos do come in, you know, because it is going to happen, you know, one out of 10 years, your business is going to suffer. It is. One out of those 10 years is just part of it. And that 1 year that when it does happen, the question is, are you going to be able to make it when that tragedy happens? And we've been through those tragedies back then. Once that one year, we've been through it, and we're able to make it like it ain't nothing. Like through COVID. When COVID hit, we didn't lose not even one employee. None.
You said you've had tragedy. So you've lost people on the job because people like fell off a roof or something like that? Or?
Oh, I have. Oh, yeah. That has always happened to us. People falling off the roofs. Yeah. Last year, we had two. Yeah. We had one guy cracked his back, man. I mean, paralyzed from the waist down.
Very dangerous.
It's very dangerous, you know? So, yeah, it's just part of it. It's going to come with it, even no matter how safe you are. It's going to happen.
Yeah, something's going to happen. Roofing is like the second most dangerous job in America, according to some stats that I read. I think deep sea fishing in the North Pole or something like that. So I think it's obviously very dangerous. Are you still getting on roofs or sometimes?
Oh, no.
No,
it's rare, man. Man, if you're gonna get me up on a roof, they call me Mr. Krabs for a reason, man. Here, that's my nickname here. Oh, there goes Mr. Krabs. It's over $1 million project, $2 million, $1 million. Yeah,
has to be a big one.
I mean, honestly, yes, and something had to happen, like very meticulous detail, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So you speak a lot of, you said you have an upcoming speaking event. You've spoken at GAF before. You wrote a book, right? How has sharing your story opened ideas for your business? How has that opened the ideas and doors for your business?
Well, you said ideas. I mean, let's talk about the book for an example. You know, people always ask me, like, they always think that the book was more like to sell the book. And I tell them, no, I'm not John Maxwell, man. I'm not going to be able to sell like that. And For me, the book is just marketing. The book is my business card. That's what it is. Because when I went and compete on a large job and I introduced myself to the owner, that other guy gave the owner a card, a business card. I gave them a book, personalized. And they got to know me, who I was from since I was a little kid, you know, all the way to who I am now. So that's all it was. It was, the book was a marketing tool. And people never understood that. It was not made to sell copies. I give those away, man. Like that event that I'm going to go to, these two events coming up, one in Georgia and one in Las Vegas, I'll be giving away a lot of books because it's, all it is marketing.
Yeah. And that helps you close bigger jobs?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's funny how you, yeah. It does.
And when you're in with a prospect, right, you're talking to them, you give them a hand, an actual physical copy of the book?
Correct. Hard copy, not a soft copy. It's a hard copy. Yep. It feels good. It has weight on it. You know, there's a lot of psychology towards it.
It's a gift. Basically, it's a gift to someone.
Absolutely. And it,
yeah, it's great. That's something that I didn't think about that, you know, you're thinking, yeah, you're thinking long term. This is a, and it's worth it too. It might cost a little bit of money, right? It took some time.
Oh, how much? It will cost some money.
And how much time did you spend in writing that book?
I want to say about a year, because it took me a year, but in increments. But also, here goes the thing that I learned, Mauricio, through the process. You can get a ghostwriter to write a book, but you're going to feel fake. So that's why I chose to write it myself. And then get editors, because my grammar is bad as hell, man. So... yeah, then I hire editors, three editors to go through it and to make sure it made sense. So yeah, it took almost a whole year to do it all from the beginning to the end, you know, and then, I mean, if you fill the book, you know what I mean, you'll see the kind of papers used. I don't know if you have a soft copy, soft or hard copy.
No, I downloaded the book from your website. Okay.
Yeah, so there's a way, you know what I mean, there's a reason why I did it. And not only that, I mean, I'm a student, and the teacher who taught me all this, he told me that first thing first, well, I'm going to help you become a person of interest. And that was one of them, is you're going to become an author. I'm like, me an author? Like, heck no, dude, I'm a roofer, dude. They're like, no, you're going to become an author. And I didn't understand why. But there's branding and there's marketing towards it. And then the second thing, I had to learn how to speak on stages, because you're not going to see a lot of people speak, especially you're not going to see a roofer. You're not going to see an HVAC contractor speak. You're not going to see those. So I had to learn how to speak.
It's a much different skill set. It's also the biggest fear that a lot of people have. I think it's the second biggest fear is actually public speaking, getting in front of people and speaking. A lot of people have that fear.
I still have fear, man, when I get up there, shoot. Start sweating and everything, you know?
Yeah. So let's talk about that at events, because we talked about briefly last week on the phone call, I have a lot of subcontractors approach me, and they come in with no experience. But basically, they have been working for years typically for another contractor, and they come, hey, I see your videos, I see your stuff that you're doing, I want to start branding myself and marketing. What are the steps they should take? Like, because I see what the thing is, that for me, the first thing they should do is really get educated. That's really the first thing they should do, is to get educated, read about it, learn about it first before you're hiring anyone, because that really just doesn't take any money. It just takes some time to learn, right? What would your advice be to those subcontractors who want to break into the actual contracting world?
You know, you said number one thing is educate yourself, you know, and we're talking about marketing, but everything is marketing, man. Even the way you look, you know, the way you smell, you know what I mean? You got to be careful with that. What you drive, you know, that's one thing that I used to do, Mauricio, back in the days. I used to drive this 3500 Silverado with 24 inch wheels with 37 inch tires lifted. And I remember there was a client of mine named David, and David he let me do his house. His house had this materials called Da Vinci. It's very expensive roofing materials.
Yeah.
And after we finished the house and everything, one thing he told me, he goes, you know what? You're not a real bad guy. And he goes, why you say that, David? And he goes, because look at your truck, man. I go, what about my truck, man? He goes, because dude, when I met you, dude, I didn't want to hire you, because I asked myself, what the hell does this kid do in the weekends? So what I did from there, I didn't drive that truck no more. Then after that, I bought a white 2500 Ram, limited edition, just basic. Then left it as is. Right now, what I drive is just it was a nice truck, don't get me wrong, is your Denali Ultimate 2500. But it's not lifted. It looks presentable. That's the number one thing, is what you see is all you get, man. That's what I'm going to live by. You know, it's what I live by. What you see is all you get. If you look like you party all the time and you love those big old trucks with big ass wheels, good luck. Because all our vehicles, they just have their branding on it. They're regular, no lifts, no nothing, nothing. Because of what you see is all you get. Also, how I dress is the same way. It's because what you see is all you get. And if that's the only thing that people can remember is that, man, because I teach it all the time to other business owners, is what you see is all you get. That's the number one thing that I have always lived by. You know, even on social media, what you post is what they see is all they get. If you're posting little minor little repairs that you do, little house, and all that, that's what you're going to get. But if you posting or advertising big stuff, that you're on top of these big buildings, you're doing big stuff, that's what you're going to get.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of people have the naive belief that your appearance does not alter your perception of the world. It does. Obviously, it does. We live in a judgmental world. It's absolutely very judgmental. So people are going to judge you based on your appearance and how you present yourself, how you talk, right? How you dress, right? It's the same thing in your business too. Like if you come in and you don't have professional looking, if you don't have professional clothing, right? It's going to hurt you. It's going to hurt your business and your appearance. So all that matters. All those stuff matters. And in the end, right? So you're on pace to do 30 million, right? With both of your companies. Beyond the numbers, you know, what do you want your companies and your life's work to stand, you know, 20 years from now?
Well, we create goals. You know, we had a goal from 2020, we set this goal. It was 2020, we set this goal for 2030 to hit to 50 mil. And people might be like, well, you can hit more. But what people don't understand, it says, ask the question again. Sorry, what was your question?
Well, 20 years from now, where do you want to be, your business to be? Where your legacy wants to be in 20 years from now?
Ooh, 20 years from now. Well, I'll be 60, man. So hopefully by that time, I'm ready to hand over the baton to the next people in line.
Do you want to pass this to your family, or what do you want to do with your business?
Boy, it's up to them, man. I mean, my son, he's 22 years old. Right now, he's in the other room. He's studying for his Florida general contractor license test. He's way smarter than me, honestly, dude. I mean, outgoing. He goes to Oklahoma. He goes to OSU, Oklahoma State University, going for his master's degree. I mean, well, his business degree. And that's what he wants to do. But he wants to do only restoration. For Advantage Roofing, you know, the roofing side, I might end up selling it. And no, if he doesn't want it, I might.
Nice.
Because okay. I might. It's sellable. You know, the business models, they're already built to, they don't need me no more. You know, like today, honestly, Maurice, I was bored today, man. I've been working on systems and procedures and that test and working on this stupid shelf that I'm building for, I'm in my hobby, man. My hobby is keeping corals from the coral reef. So I'm building something in another room for that, for a big old 220-gallon coral reef fish tank.
Yeah. You said you hired an internal developer to build your CRM, also to obviously know the importance of AI, right? You talk about the importance of AI, and you know it's very important. You said, obviously, like, you're not the best highly educated in that subject, but you brought someone that actually as an actual expert in that. What made you hire that person? Because most construction businesses do not hire a technology person into the business. What made you hire that person?
Well, it goes back to one of our core values is innovation. Is one thing we always say is our tagline is, if it ain't broken, break it. You know, and what I believe is either you're using technology or you're building it. You got those two options. And for us, we build it. We love to build our own technology. So a lot of our processes and systems, they're built and they're owned by us. So with this AI stuff that came out, you know, it's been out for a while. This software engineer guy, he wanted to come and work with the company. Like we didn't tell him like, hey, we're just going to look for someone. No, he found us. Well, let me take that back. Our marketing guy that works here, the software engineer wanted to work so bad with him. So that's what's weird, you know? And then he saw everything what we're doing. He went into all these CRMs and he goes, I can do something better. So he has built a lot of things way better. But right now we're in the beta stage where we're only working. We have the program, but it's built for us right now. So our goal at the end, Mauricio, is going to be to be able to license it out to people. That's going to be our goal.
Is it going to be for commercial contractors typically, or is it going to be services? Commercial services? Okay.
For right now, first thing first is we always say MVP, most viable product, is we know that service and maintenance is our biggest deal. It's not our biggest revenue maker, but it's what produces the most revenue at the end. If you look at the data in our CRM, you're going to be able to track that a lot of those big jobs that come in is because of service and maintenance.
Got it. So it's going to be for service and maintenance businesses, right? In the construction business. Okay, got it. Okay. Awesome.
Yeah, for now.
All right, Victor, anything, where do people find you?
Oh, man, that's a hard part, man. I can't even believe I did this one, man. I haven't been doing podcasts for a while, dude. Honestly, you know what I mean? I'm not like I used to be into all the social media because a couple of years, you know what I mean? I made a little commitment to myself is keep the main thing, you know?
Got it. You just focus on your businesses, basically. Not really coaching, consulting anymore as you used to.
Not no more, man. Like I used to now. Because I noticed that if I didn't keep the main thing, I believe that the businesses wouldn't be where they're at today. Because I can't direct my energy to different places. So again, it's going back to them keeping the main thing.
Awesome. Victor, thank you, man. I appreciate
it. No, you're welcome, brother.
Thanks, man. Have a good one.
Take care.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros. If you got value from today's episode, do us a favor. Follow the show, share it with a contractor friend, and leave a quick review. Want help using AI or smarter marketing to grow your business? Head to contractormarketingpros.net and book your free strategy call.